Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the Distraction Pieces podcast, episode 315. And I am very excited to have sat down with Neve Algar this week. Recorded this a couple of weeks back. There's a film coming out March 13th called Calm with Horses. And it's already in my films of the year list. Just the cast already is... The cast before I'd seen it was a who's who of people I'm a fan of. Neve being one of them, previous guest Barry Keoghan being another, and next week's guest Cosmo Jarvis being another. Now Cosmo, I've raved about in other episodes. I loved him in Lady Macbeth. I loved him in Peaky Blinders, and he's amazing in this. So, I mean, it's also worth mentioning. Obviously, I've recorded two podcasts with two people who are in the same film. So I don't think there's tons of repetition between this week and next week, but there's probably going to be one or two bits where I'm going, and what I loved about the film was this, or whatever else, because, you know, I don't listen back to these things. They are conversations. I get excited. You'll hear loads of times I get excited with Neve here, and you'll see from... You will have seen from the Polaroid, we were incredibly excited after our chat. I do the Polaroid pictures at the end of the chat. And it was one of my favourites. As said, it's always nerve-wracking when it's someone that you've not met before, but you've got mad respect for and you're a big fan of. And then you sit down and they're just really easy to talk to and just a good human doing good shit. So, yeah, I was really excited about that and I really enjoyed that. We talk about all sorts of stuff. The virtues, Calm with Horses, the bisexual, things to come. A few people that come up in conversation. Stephen Graham has been on the podcast twice, so go back and grab that if you fancy it. As I mentioned, Barry Keoghan, he's been on before. Who else do we mention? We mentioned Desiree Atkavan, previous guest. We mentioned Michael Smiley. That was an early guest. He's great. Yeah, tons of good people. So let's jump into this. As said, the main point is that Calm with Horses is out incredibly soon, and I really recommend you catch it in the cinema because it blew me away. Let's get into the podcast. And as said, next week's guest is Cosmo Jarvis, Neve's co-star in Calm with Horses. So yeah, this is the Traction Pieces podcast, episode 315 with Neve Algar.
Started everything rolling. There's no pressure on that. That's fine. I'll warn you before we say scandalous things, not realising it's all going. But how's it all been going?
It's all been going good, yeah. I've been just running around in Storm Dennis out there.
Yeah. It's taken a turn at the last minute, hasn't it? I got here earlier than expected, because normally I get everywhere early and just linger about. And in this instance, I cut out the lingering about bit because it's horrible out there.
Yeah, definitely.
So I'm just going to come in and set up and get comfy.
I had a suitcase and I took it out of the back of the car and I had to sprint about 100 yards after it. It was took off on wheels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's intense. But yeah, you're inside and in the warmth now. I should introduce you. I'm here with Neve Algar. How's it all going?
It's all been going good. Yeah, we're just...
enjoying all the promo.
I'm doing a bit of promo at the moment, yeah. It's fun.
It's the weird part that isn't in the deal.
Yeah.
Like when you think about it. When you're focusing on a role and your character and all the artistic side of it,
yeah,
you don't think of the, you know, 6 months, a year down the line, the coming back to discuss that. When you potentially moved on to the next role and so on and so forth.
I always think it's right, because you must know this as well, it's like you sometimes shoot, what ends up being the edit isn't always what the script was.
Yeah.
So when you see it, you're like, oh, right, they went with that.
That's what we were making.
And then we shot some other stuff.
Yeah.
And thankfully, I've seen the film.
Yeah.
Because some bits did change, but none of my character stuff changed. But
yeah,
I think it's always, you know what I think is always interesting? Because I have to go back now and do pickups for a thing I did.
Yeah.
And just trying to get back into that headset is strange, because you've moved on and you think that character's done. And
it is that weird thing of when you're on a project for an extended time, you really bed yourself in that role. Yeah. But if you're dedicated to what you do, when you're on to the next thing, you're bedded in that role. So to just jump back and go, oh, it's only a day.
You know,
it's
like, yeah.
It's not only a day.
Yeah.
Can I rewatch some stuff
and
before?
And the reason why they're going back to do the pickups because they need to do really important bits that is definitely going to make it into the film.
Key.
Yeah, so what I started doing is I started doing playlists.
Right.
For the characters.
Oh, wicked, yeah.
So that it's like it's almost like a muscle memory. So you can just start listening to that again and you can remember. I don't know what me, it's more a visual of trying to remember where her head was at or in particular.
I love that as an approach because it's. I've had to go and do pickups before and I've had to be kind of. Can you show me anything?
Me.
That we shot, that you were that we're using, because do you know what I mean? Because you need, as you said, you don't know which bits have been used. You don't know what the character has become in the edit. It's like, can you?
Yeah, and sometimes like, the director's always kind of afraid to show the actor.
Yeah, yeah.
In case you get like, but it's like I know what I look like.
Yeah,
it's more just like I just can't remember exactly. This was like you know 8 months ago, but yeah, that's what I started doing. And so each character has a playlist, and then just. Pop it on and then just kind of be listening to it in the train journey or the plane journey there. Yeah.
I love that. So, I mean, obviously we're going to talk a load about Calm with Horses. I saw it earlier in the year and absolutely adored it. It's already in my films of the year kind of list. But I want to, as we've got a bit of time, I want to kind of jump around a bit over your career and the... It's weird because it was only when looking back the breakout moment in my mind for you wasn't actually the first series of yours I'd watched. But we'll get to all that. But The Virtues last year was really just felt like a hell of a moment and a hell of a piece for everyone involved.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? That character seemed like a dream character.
Yeah.
Because she's kicks ass. She's hard as fuck. But she's also... got loads of layers and vulnerability and there's so much in it. How was that to get that role?
It's funny because I always wanted to work with Shane. I think I used to do like this actor studio. I think it's very similar to, is it called Workshop in Nottingham?
In Nottingham, yeah.
There's a place.
That's where Shane got loads, got Vicky from and loads of others, isn't it? Yeah,
that's the place. And there was a place in Dublin called The Factory, it's now called Bow Street, and they did some kind of similar ideas where they would kind of workshop scenes or we'd look at films and we'd, you know, dissect them. And I remember we watched like scenes from This Is England, and that was like, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. And so I like Shane was always one of the directors I would love to work with. It was just, it felt weird that he was the first one for TV that I worked with.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh God, I've got like imposter syndrome because I shouldn't be here because I didn't, you know.
Yeah.
You see actors, it's especially moving over from Dublin to London who spend about, you know, 10 years trying to get work. And I was lucky enough that that was kind of like one of the first big auditions that I did and got. And the fact that he works, he meets, because what he does is he meets with the actors and he kind of builds the character around that way. He has an idea in his head.
Yeah.
He obviously knows what story he's making, but it's trying to find where the actors fit into that story.
Yeah.
Where the characters, and, you know, he's one of the most open and generous guys I've met and he makes you feel very safe.
Yeah.
So you find yourself like going for like a pint and you're sharing stories and he's doing the same and then he's like, well, what if, you know, what if Dina, I know Neve, you love boxing, but what if she uses it as a kind of like the wrong idea in life, like how she kind of solves problems. And we kind of, that's how that kind of came about, was her entry into the story. And then he always knew like where it was going to end, that she was going to end up, you know, killing her mom. Well, I didn't know that. He never told me that was going to happen.
Wow.
Until we were probably three quarters of the way shooting it. And he took about a week to redraft the final episode.
Yeah.
And he was saying like, you know, it's not going to be the typical half hour or hour, what it was. It was going to be a feature length. And because he didn't want to split it up. He was trying to, like, he was looking at maybe splitting it up over two episodes.
And, yeah.
And, you know, as you see, it just works as one. I didn't know that was going
to
happen.
I love that. It's amazing to hear that, because I wanted to kind of ask about Shane's process in that way, because yeah. I've had a tiny look into it, because weirdly, I auditioned for The Virtues. And it was that thing of, I was buzzing, because similarly, I'm just obsessed with Shane. I think he's amazing. Yeah. So to get that email and to be asked to do a self-tape. And for me, it was what I had to do was essentially set my camera up and then open the email, and it'd tell you what to do, and I have to do my first take, improvise it, and go. And I loved that, because it felt like the pressure was off. Weirdly, for me, that feels like the pressure's off, because you can't do it 100 times. Or that's it, it's real. There's not that kind of... I think on self-tapes at times, people can get obsessed with, let's try it one more time, let's do it over here, let's do it... Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you don't know anything in advance, you're literally, well...
You can't mess up.
It's out of my hands, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly how the audition came about. Was, I think Shaheen contacted my agent, was like, this is a thing that's come in. She doesn't need to prepare anything, she just needs to show up. So, and that was the thing. I was like, my mum was even saying to me, she's like, why are you getting nervous?
Yeah.
You don't even know what you're doing yet. Huh? And I was like, it's a fair point. And she did the exact same thing where she read out the character description and just started improvising.
I love it.
And then when I went to the recall to meet with Shane, it was the same idea. There was nothing to be prepared.
Yeah.
So I just looked at that as like, Jesus, I get to just improvise with Shane Meadows for the day.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I don't get the job, at least I get that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, what an amazing moment.
Yeah.
So how did it ever feel like, because from the sounds of that, there doesn't seem to be a clear moment of it switching from I'm auditioning to I'm workshopping to we're filming to it's over. It feels like a solid process.
Well, you didn't tell me I had the job until it was very funny. I did the callback, and then I went to another audition and was just improvising some stuff. And it's just the meeting just kept on going. And then he's talking about, and in Sheffield, you love it up there, Niamh, it's great, you know, it's got that, like, it's got a towny but a city vibe. And I'm kind of looking sideways at him going, like, why are we talking about Sheffield?
Yeah.
And then, he's like, oh, yeah, sorry, do you want to do this? Do you want to be in this? So I'm like, oh my God, yeah. And then I came out and I was like, my maid, and I was like, I've just been offered the role. And he's like, all right, just calm down a minute now. I'll just, you know, might ring around and just see if this is like legit, that you're not making this up.
Yeah, I love that it's that kind of industry that you have to take that moment and pause. I've had that before where I'm like, someone's told me, oh, you've got this, you're going to be in this. I'm like, all right, let's see. We'll see, shall we?
Yeah.
I'll wait until I hear from my agent.
Until you're on set. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
In your trailer, waiting around. Yeah, no, he's just a different... Shane's got his own style of directing. It's very special, and... As I said, he makes you feel very safe, and you're allowed to, by doing that, you go into very vulnerable places that you wouldn't have ever really kind of thought about as a person. So, like, there was one time, and I was really shitting it, because we were doing the scene where Tina meets with her social worker, with Niamh Cusack, and we were sitting around in this, like, random office building. It was half of it was being used, and the other half was just, we were filming in, and I just went on into like a little quiet corner, and that was the one scene that we hadn't been scripted, and we had only kind of workshopped it.
Mm.
Myself and Niamh had workshopped it, and we'd found something that we knew would work, but Shane had said, we're not going to go that route.
Right.
So I was like, all right, I don't know. I felt really lost.
So what route are we going?
I was really lost. And I was sitting on this couch outside where, and they were setting up, and Shane kind of saw me. He was like, you all right? And he's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm just, I'm writing a letter. And he's like, who are you writing? Like, what is it? And I was like, well, it's a letter to Finn. If Dina was writing a letter to, because that was, I had to like center my mind, because I thought I was going to start crying.
Yeah.
So I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And he's like, can I read it? And I was like, oh, Shane, no, I'm crap at spelling, but yeah, give it a go. And he's like, oh no, he's like, no, I won't read it. And I was like, no, you can. You go and have a read. And he started reading it, and he got a bit emotional. We both got emotional. And he goes, you're fine. You know exactly what's going on in the scene.
Yeah.
That's what you're doing. You're going in there and you want to give you want to give your social worker this letter that you want to give to your son. So don't be worrying about anything.
Yeah.
But then on the other side, he's telling Eve, right, so she's going to be coming in and you're going to be telling her that she's not going to be seeing her son.
Yeah.
So, you know, he takes the time, you know, for people to set up eight cameras because he knows that he's going to get that moment just once or twice and then he's going to cut around it.
I love that. And it feels key that, because it's one of the things I've learned, again, in my brief time moving into acting and that, is that people talk about the kind of tricks to, here's what I think about when I need to cry and here's this and here's that. But if you believe the character, then you don't need to think about any of that, right? If you're writing, if you're believing that you've not seen this child and you want to write a heartfelt letter, then that will make you cry, as you said, in the prep, in the corridor while you're doing it, let alone on camera.
And that's the thing, both of us are there trying not to cry.
Yeah.
That's what we do in life, is you're not trying to cry. If anything, everyone goes out of the way not to cry. But when you see, you're like really trying to push out them tears. Yeah, I think it was someone who said that. It was like they were really nervous about doing a scene because they said, you know, it said in the script, this is where they tear up. And then the director just read it and went, take out that stage direction. Just go on into the scene. And then they start crying.
Yeah.
Because the pressure was off.
The pressure is
And they were
there.
Just actually listening to the text and they were taking in the other person.
And again, you've nailed it. Yap Malgram used to say that he'd far rather watch someone trying not to cry than trying to cry. Because, again, that's the reality of no one goes unless, you know, they're trying to do an emotional Instagram video or something. No one wants to cry or wants to put that performance
on. You're
normally
trying
to fight it back. And that's what makes it so real. So if you'd watched Shane, you know, when you were 10 years ago, you're watching This Is England and stuff like that, then you will have watched Stevie as well.
Yeah.
So how was that to work with him and to work on such a emotional piece, I guess?
Yeah. I think by the time we got to filming, I kind of gotten over that, the idea that like this is someone that I have looked up to in acting for a long time. So because we did weeks of workshopping where, you know, we did anything but the scenes that we were actually going to shoot.
Right.
You know, he doesn't, that's the idea with Shane. He wants to leave everything to the day and explore it there because he feels like if you've kind of dealt with that emotion in a workshop, you might not find it again. And you're just trying to recreate something that was really magical in a workshop. Yeah. And then like,
remember
the time we really nailed that. Now we're going to try and do that again, but we've got all the cameras on you.
Yeah.
And also, it's more interesting when you see two characters that, say, should have known each other for years, sit down and say nothing.
Mm.
And that's all the work that you do, like, in the workshop, because, you know, me and Helen Behan, who plays Anna, and Frank Laverty, who plays my brother in it, you know, we all went out with the kids who play my nieces and nephews, and then we went bowling and we went getting, like, pizza and stuff. But we were all kind of, like, semi-in-character.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was going around with like a bag of coins when me and the kids were like running around, you know, on all the arcade machines. And I was just trying to be that cool auntie that, you know, she turns up, you know, she blows in every couple of months.
Yeah.
Is the best crack. And then it probably leaves off the back of a massive fight.
Yeah.
But when she comes back in, she's like,
yeah.
She's up for the crack.
The kids never know about the fight bit.
No, they never know about the fight bit.
And
I think that's the best thing about kids because they don't care. What she loves so much about when she goes into the house is the kids don't care if she's been working or not. They don't care about that. They just want an auntie who they can have fun with and who can tell them stories and play games. And I think that's why Dina, like, I was always trying to, me and Shane were trying to work out, is like, what does Dina find in this house that she doesn't get in life? And I think that's the idea of being around a family that loves each other.
Yeah.
Because that's what she's looking for and that's what she never had.
Yeah.
And it's almost like this little hub for her just to recharge and feel wanted, and I think that's why she's in that. And then when she meets Joseph, that's exactly what he's doing, but obviously he's trying to find something else.
Yeah.
And when you see those two people and it's completely silent and they're sitting on the couch and there's just this, I don't know, there's just two people that, you know, they completely understand each other, but they don't need to explain anything.
Yeah,
because they're both being through the absolute ringer.
Yeah, and again, it addressed something that I never see. Again, it's something I'm obsessed with, but I never seem to see represented in TV or film. And it's loads of scripts I'm working on. I'm trying to find a way to make it happen. But they really represented the fact that I think people are often at their strongest when they feel they have to be that for someone else rather than when they have to be it for themselves.
Yeah.
So Dina, every other time she comes there, she falls apart, everything goes wrong. Mm-hmm. This time, Joseph's there and he's falling apart.
Yeah,
so she can't fall apart.
Yeah.
Normally, if he wasn't there, it would have been the same thing. Something would have happened, she goes off. And I think that's such a key thing in humans at times, that we can be so, so strong for other people. And as soon as we get that time, everyone's okay now. It's why people mourn in different periods, I feel. It's because if you've got to be the strong person for the family, it could be a year later that you actually get time for it to hit you.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
And it felt like it had that. But the beautiful thing was it felt like it had that for both characters without the other one knowing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Joseph kind of had to be strong on behalf of Dean and so on and so forth. So it felt like a really nice synergy there.
Because you would have loved to explore, like, what would happen if, you know, she had told them what her plan was.
Yeah, yeah.
But she didn't have anyone. Everyone was going through their own shit that they... She could, you know, that's the thing, is like you don't realise what someone else is going through.
Yeah.
You think people understand, but that's the problem, they don't. And you just said it, you summed it up exactly that, yeah.
So how was it moving on from that? Because Shane's way of working seems to be a unique way, and it seems to be a way that actors love, because you really get to workshop and get deep into it.
Mm-hmm.
You go on to your next job, and you've got your script and your call time.
Yeah,
you know, often, you know. Yeah. So, how was it to go on from that onto?
Because I went on to do Pure directly after that.
Oh wow, yeah.
And he was. I think he rang me because he was asking me about there was possible pickups, and he was like, "What are you up to?" And I'm just like, "I'm learning lines." And he was like, "What's that?"
Yeah, how's that work?
Like, how does that work? But that's it. Yeah, you just. I think that's the trick, isn't it, to make it look as though you're not reading it off a piece of paper, you know, it has to come from your head. And I think, you know, acting, it's a craft. You know, there's going to be different courses almost, like, and you just have to work around it. It's almost like figuring out the directors. Funny thing about actors, right, we go on to different sets. So we have an understanding of what it was on, like, the set previous.
Yeah.
But directors don't really do that. They have their own, their set is there, so they don't really alter the way
same,
in which,
right? Yeah.
They always say it's the same. So you become, you're not only that, are you changing, you know, you're figuring out who you are as the character, who you are as a person, but you also have to figure out, right, how am I going to work on his method of how this set is going to run?
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, like, we have to be very open to ideas. You just, I worked at Michael Smiley just before Christmas on a film, and he said, you have to commit and embrace.
Yeah.
And that you've got those two things, you'll be fine.
I recorded a podcast yesterday, and the end of it ended up just being both of us raving about the positive influence of Michael Smiley. I bumped into him on Friday at a party, and he's changed my plans for the next month, essentially.
Really?
I thought I knew what I was doing, but he gave me a wonderfully motivational but also quite aggressive pep talk on what I should be doing and why am I waiting for someone else to tell me I can do that and that kind of thing. And I was just like, and again, the guy, a comedian, Rich Wilson, that I recorded with yesterday, was saying, Smiley drifts into his life every 6 months or so and just, it's wonderful. It's such knowledge and openness and wisdom. And
he's a gem.
He really is.
Yeah.
And that's Sensor you all working on,
yes,
right? We'll get to I'll leave it until the end to do the what's to come, because normally you can't talk about it anyway, so all these kind of things. But before we get back to Calm with Horses, I wanted to talk about The Bisexual, because I think it's one of the most underrated shows in recent years, and I think Desiree Akhavan is a genius. How was that to work on? Because as a viewer, it felt like such a refreshing thing to see, because it didn't have the agendas that you might think it would have, and it was just honest and open, and it felt so real.
Yeah.
How was that to be part of?
It was the first time that I've worked with a director who's also acting.
Yes.
And she was writing it. So she's like a, you know, triple threat, where she's, as she's kind of saying the lines in the scene, she's also thinking about directing how this scene is going to work, and
that's mad.
If maybe the writing can change.
Yeah.
So it's like her brain is just you know, lit, must be all lit up on what, like how much energy she can expel on that. But I really loved it. I did it at the same time. I was shooting Pure at the same time, so I was flipping right. between the two sets. Yeah,
right, I see.
Which was full on.
Yeah,
but really enjoyable. And she's a really, really intelligent woman.
Yeah.
And as you said, I think it was flew completely under the radar. But I'd seen her feature film.
Yes.
Beforehand, so you know she has a very specific style.
The Miseducation of Glamour Post, or the one before that.
She directed that, I think, before, but the one was Appropriate Adult.
Yes, yes, yes.
So she, you know, she, like, Desiree has got a style, and it's you can see it in her writing. It's quite quick, and it's almost like the dark humour that people have.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, completely.
But like, Brian Gleeson was on it, and there was days where, you know, his humour is so dry, and he's so, like, comedic timing wise, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
So I, like, a lot of the time I'm just trying not to laugh.
Yeah, of course. It's one of them. I got sent previews of it because I had Desiree on the podcast, and I watched it exactly as you said, thinking, well, this is just going to be the biggest. It's just amazing. And it did seem to go so under the radar, despite it being so...
Yeah.
Spot on. How is it working with Maxine Peake? Because she's just an icon and a legend.
She's incredible.
She's one of the people I study to become a better actor. So I can imagine, as a woman, even more so, that it's another this amazing woman that's been doing it for so long. And
she has a, like, you know yourself, like, you're sitting around on set for a couple of hours before you even get to start filming anything, and just sitting around just chatting with Maxine about, she just come off of working on Waterloo.
Yes.
So she was,
wow.
You know, she was telling me about that process, and she was saying, like, she's like, oh, I don't even know if I'm going to be in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's the way Mike works, is that, you know, he shoots so much that you might just be, you could literally just be playing the tea lady in one scene, but you'd have shot, like, your entire story. So just to hear stuff like that, and I'm like, but, like, at the back of my head, I'm going, she's definitely going to be in it.
it's so true, though. It's the most inspirational thing. I remember on the first film I ever did, which I ended up being completely edited out of. Again, I did exactly that. I did a few months on set, wasn't in it at all. But I remember having a scene with Aidan Gillen, and I'm a big fan of him. I think he's absolutely amazing.
Yep.
And he was just in the background and had no lines on these two days, and so did I.
Yeah.
And the other actor I was on there with was moaning about how we've got no lines and we thought we were going to have more.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there watching, that's the dude off Love, Hate and The Wire, and so many things I adore. What's he doing in the background?
Yeah.
And what's he doing in these scenes? Because, again, you're not always at the front. And, again, someone like Maxine saying, I don't know if I'm going to be in it. You're like, oh, wow. I would be thinking that, but I'm not
but
you.
But this is after she's filmed, but I think but there were times when, like, you know, we had seen, I think it's really interesting, especially with, she's, you know, talented, seasoned actors, is that, you know, they're not just not doing anything in the background.
Exactly that.
They are, you know, not that they're stealing the scenes, but they're just, they're doing something that the character is going to be doing. And it could be anything from just cleaning a cup in the background. You're like, why is she cleaning a cup?
I say it all the time on the podcast, and it annoys people because anytime there's an actor on it becomes my kind of catchphrase of it. But the thing I learned from Ada was realizing, oh, he's the lead in his own life. He's in the background, but all of us are the lead in our own lives, in our day to day lives. No one's in the background.
No.
That's not how it works.
But you don't know you're in the background.
Yeah, exactly. So that was it. Just watching him, I was like, oh, he really knows what's going on and what he's thinking and what he's doing. He's not just stood there thinking, I wonder what's on catering today. Or how many more times are we going to do this? He's got his own thing going on. And as you said, it's not stealing the scene or interrupting or getting in the way of anything. But it also makes it a lot more fun as an actor. Because if you are in the background, if you're not doing anything mentally...
Yeah, if you're not doing anything stealing from what's actually going on in the scene, don't be... Me and my mate Shauna, she's an actor as well, but we always joke about, you know, if you were really doing something crazy in the background, that, like,
really zany.
You don't notice it then and there, but when they go into the edit, they're like, what are they doing? What are they doing in the background?
It makes me think of years ago, a family party, my little cousin had clearly got bored of not being the centre of attention, and he really casually moonwalked across the room with his hands in his pockets, didn't say anything. And that's exactly that. I can imagine that in the background. It's like, oh, just casually moonwalk. Why does Neve moonwalk past in the background? This is crazy. So, yeah, it must be kind of an exciting few years then, really, because the bisexual pure and the virtues are all really kind of credible genre-bending shows for Channel 4 and things like that, that are all kind of taking a lot of risks and trying a lot of stuff. It's not the kind of... Again, it saddens me a little that a lot of them aren't around anymore, but every time I've had people like Michael Fassbender on or James McAvoy, all of them have A credit in The Bill or in Casualty or in one of these shows. And it seems like, you know, you're in all these really kind of, again, whether they get second seasons or not, they're all stuff that are taking risks and pushing boundaries. Yeah. So is that exciting to get to,
I think,
to play in those roles?
And I think it's always important to not look at it as, like, you sign on to do a job, but you're not thinking, this is going to be six seasons. You just have to look at it in that one.
And just tell
that story in that one season and not go, well, in season two, this is when
we're really going to get into it.
Who knows who's going to watch the first season of it?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's just, I think, you know, those scripts were just coming out around a really, really good time.
Yeah. I love it. Well, let's get on to Calm with Horses, because again, it is a different process than TV. It is, you've got this restricted amount of time to tell this story and to get these emotions across. You've not got 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks to build this character.
Yep.
How was it to get this script and to work with this team? Because it feels, well, obviously it was Nick's kind of feature debut as a director. Cosmo, I'm just the biggest fan of. I think he's absolutely amazing in so many things. Barry is another one who's been on the podcast who's just amazing. So it seemed like there was a really good team of people who, I guess it doesn't feel like there's anyone who's the star. Therefore, it feels like everyone's just working as a team and pulling it all in the right direction. Was that the vibe
as you got into it? I think it was because everyone knew that the story was the star.
You knew
you were telling this. It was so, the script was really tight.
Yeah.
It had come off of, so Colin Barrett had a book of short stories called Young Skins, and then Calm with Horses was one of the short stories in it.
Right.
And DMC, so that was Michael Fassbender's company, I think it acquired the rights and were then developing it with Joe Murtha, the screenwriter.
Sure.
Into this story. So, and then I think Nick was taken on. Nick at the same time was reading Young Skins. It was all kind of happening at the same time. And he was still in college at the time, and he just had done Slap, which was his short film he did with Joe Cole.
Right.
Really, really great short film. Yeah. You should check it out.
I've not watched it, but I've heard that all of his shorts feel as if he's an established director who's decided to go off and make a short.
Yeah.
And then it's like, all right, no, this is where you're starting.
Yeah.
This is
and when you know, when people watch Calm with Horses, it won't look like a first-time feature. No,
100%.
I don't know what a first-time feature looks like, but it's not that.
No.
You know, it's really slick and atmospherically so intense.
Well, the confidence in the direction, I think. The comfort in taking its time when it wants to take its time. Not that need to kind of always have to smash through things.
No. You allow the silences, you know.
Yeah.
And Cosmo, you know, he drives the entire narrative, and he's this, you know, he completely commits to what he's doing, like physically and mentally.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know he was from Devon till afterwards.
Right.
But he kept telling me he was from Devon. But like, all I could hear was Arm's accent.
Yeah.
And that is like, you know, West of Ireland drawl and... That's all I knew until I bumped into him.
So accurate as well, isn't it?
So accurate. And he moved over to Ireland like 2 weeks before filming and was just hanging out with local lads.
Love it.
In the town.
Yeah.
And he was telling me all this and I'm like, are you... Okay, well just, you know, don't go missing.
Yeah.
Because like he was telling me like some, like who he was hanging out with and I'm just like, okay, well just... You know, keep your phone on you. This is acting. This is pretending. At the end of the day,
it's what I loved when I had Barry on, though, because I'd seen his films and thought, oh, you know, he feels quite, I don't know, well versed in it. Like he's such a good actor.
Yeah.
And then I meet him, and he's just a little lad off the estate kind of thing. A really nice little. He just loves his chat and his messing about. And I was like, all right, you're that kid. I love it.
No, and so Barry and Cosmo had. We're signed on already to be part of it. So Shaheen Baig, who cast
yes.
The Virtues, and I just finished on that, and she said, this is going to be coming up, do you want to, you know, went in and did a tape, and then went in and did a chemistry read with Cosmo.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think I got cast off the back of it.
I told Cosmo this, but as the cast was being put together and going up on IMDb, I was hassling Shaheen so much. Because again, I'd love Cosmo from Lady Macbeth, and then Barry I'd been a big fan of. And literally, I'd just finished watching The Virtues when I saw you pop up. I'm like, you're literally putting just all the best people together. How can I get involved in this? And poor Shaheen has to put up with my not subtle DMs going, how's it all going? Have you finished up on this one yet? What's going on? But it did feel like a real, again, that's the thing. It's all people who've put amazing performances in already, but also it all feels like people have the same approach and outlook to it. It didn't feel like it'd be one of them sets that's quite divided. That one person has got this process and you've got this process and you kind of all keep it separate.
Yeah.
It felt like you would all have similar approaches.
Yeah, no,
it.
We spent like about a week workshopping, especially the scenes, because I all my stuff with Barry is we've one scene together.
Yeah.
And those characters hate each other. So
I was going to say, it wouldn't help if
you're
that close. And that, yeah.
No. But I knew Barry, and me and Barry are mates. So, you know, that was, we didn't really have to workshop anything around that. It was more so trying to, me and Cosmo wanted to kind of figure out who these characters were before everything fell apart.
Yeah.
And before Jack came along, and we would, you know, we met up in London and we were chatting through some things, and then we got to like hang out with Killian, who played Jack, and we went like, it kind of was very similar to what Shane does. I mean, you know, we went to like a play arcade and went for food, got chips, and you know, we're just hanging out. And I think it's also just building the trust with someone who's so young, and you know, they understand that when we go to between action, you know, and cut, that's when we're working and that's where we're focusing on it.
Yeah.
And I think it's also great on that set, is because when you do have a kid on set, everyone behaves a hell of a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, there's no cursing.
Yeah.
And, you know, days are usually shorter sometimes. But, you know, this was an independent film, so everyone who, you felt like everyone is on that job because they want to be there.
Yeah.
You know,
I love it, because it feels like you nailed that, the nuances of that relationship. The diner scene with you and Cosmo is the epitome of that. Is all we've seen of your character up to this point is having to be the strong, determined single mother, essentially, who's got some resentment, but resentment in protection of her child, and has got some anger, but anger because of the situation. And in that diner scene, it does the kind of smoothest gradient from seeing, realizing that there's a sympathy there as well from your character, but then just switching to the two of you being teenagers, just kind of on a date.
Yeah.
It felt like a third or fourth date rather than years down the line.
Yeah, you kind of wanted to, you hit the nail on the head there, is that you want to see, because you have to root for that.
Yeah.
For him to choose that, you know, because he's a character who's torn between the push and pull of the criminal family and then his responsibilities as a dad, and you really want, as an audience, to fight for him to go down that route with Ursula and his son, and you have to see what that could have been, you know.
And it has to be powerful as well, because it's easy. There's other things to root for in the story. There's another man in the mix who's clearly a better choice, a nicer life, all these kind of things. So you need the strength in that moment of, oh no, this is what we want though. Yes, that's the logical, that's the right, but this is what we want. You have to see what you fell in love with to begin with. Yes,
you know me. If you just see two people fighting all the time, you're like, why were they ever together?
Yeah, and that's so common in TV and film though, to just show that part of it and not show the bit that makes it all logical.
Yeah.
That makes it all make sense.
And it doesn't
sense.
Have to be chronological. You can put that in between because, for me, that scene, I love that scene because it is like a respite from all the action and that unnervy kind of thread that's throughout the whole film, that suddenly we're just in this pocket that feels like a different film but fits so perfectly in.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly. And again, there's a reality in that.
Mm.
When people are writing scripts or making films, it's so easy to go, oh no, that wouldn't happen, or that wouldn't. But in real life, that shit does happen all the time. The stuff that happens in your day-to-day life in a script, most people say, well, that wouldn't all happen in the same week. That doesn't make any sense. Like, we need to space this out over a month or whatever else. But that's the beauty of
relating the everyday, you know.
Yeah. So how is it kind of now that it's on its way out? Because it feels like it's something that must have been such, as you said, a passion project for everyone involved. You often hear of a passion project, but it's a passion project for the writer-director or for this. But it feels like everyone, it meant the world to them. And everyone put a lot into it. It feels like, particularly in the scenes with your child in this, there were some scenes that you have and some scenes that Cosmo has that must have been really hard because they're really emotional and really real because there's a child involved. It doesn't feel as... You can't switch off as much between reality and the fiction that you're making when there's a little human there.
Well, is that the scene when he says that he's going to bring the kid back?
Yeah, he doesn't.
And... you know, I got nieces and nephews. I don't have any kids, but I got nieces and nephews. And I just kind of thought in that moment, if someone said, you know, I'm going to take your nephew, I'm going to go play football with him, and I'm swearing he's going to be back by 6 o'clock and it's going 7:30 and they're not back. And then it goes from worry to rage.
Really quick.
Really quickly.
Yeah.
And then, so for me, that was an easy one, I think, to like tap into.
Yeah.
Especially little Killian, because he's so cute.
And
we were working with horses that day. It was kids, the horses. There was a whole shebang happening on that day. And
there's a lot in this that people shy away from in film. But
and Cosmo is, I love working with Cosmo. He said to me in that scene, because it was a scene where I have to kind of pull him away because I wanted to talk to him, and he wouldn't move, and he's such a big guy, what was so annoying on that is because he was like, I have to like bulk up, Niamh, and I was like, okay. And like, he'd eat like about 10 burgers, but he would all turn into muscle. I'm just like, what the hell? What genetically, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So to move him was like trying to move a boulder. So he was like, go on, just move me, push me, like shove me. And so by the time I got to actually talking to him, I'm trying to push him and shove him up that hill to actually talk to him. I was like so emotional.
Yeah.
He'd like pulled it out of me.
And there's a load there that you don't need to fake.
No.
That you've taken it already.
Just sometimes, as you say, like to get emotionally to a place, you don't, sometimes it can come out in different places. And I think firstly, she's trying not to be emotional in front of her kid, and especially with other parents that are probably already thinking something else about her, especially now that her ex has now come on. Come to the equine therapy.
It's intense.
It's intense.
So how was it when you saw it? Because as you said, these things change a lot. These things are different. You've had a bit of time to get distance. Because in general as well, broadly, how are you with watching things that you're in or involved in? It can be a really varied experience.
Watching the first two, because it took, like, Shane edited it for about a year. So watching that, I felt like I was watching a character. I wasn't really watching myself. And because a lot of the scenes that we did, when you're really feeling something, you kind of forget what you did.
Yeah.
So a lot of the time, you know, you go like, go again. And you're like, I don't remember what I did, Shane. Can you jog my memory? So that was... I think that was actually quite easy to watch.
Yeah.
And I was like in South Africa at the time. I would have loved to have watched it like at home with not my family, because I think I would have frightened them, but like with my mates. It's really hard. I think it is hard. If anyone says they can easily look at themselves on screen and not get paranoid or go like, why does my eyebrows do that? Or my forehead? Because you're not used to it. Like even when you look in the mirror, you're looking a mirrored image of yourself. You're not actually looking as how everyone sees you walking around.
Completely. I find it's such a jarring thing. And I'm torn on if I want to go the route of I never watch anything I do or not. Because most of the things I've watched, and again, I'm newer to a lot of it. So I'm probably right in some of the times that I'm thinking, oh, I wasn't very good in that scene. There's going to be a lot that you're overanalyzing. But equally, it's that weird thing of, for me, Everyone else in the scene is the characters.
Yeah.
And then I bowl in.
And then you're there. Yeah.
Oh, there's me. That's not the character. There's me all of a sudden. It's really, that's a jarring thing to kind of take on.
It is, yeah. But sometimes, you know, that's so true. There I am.
There's me.
I got to watch this in at the Toronto Film Festival, and that was wonderful. The first time I was seeing it.
Wow.
So, and I was massively jet-lagged because I went from South Africa to Toronto, which I'm telling you, it's not direct.
Yeah.
You go to about six other countries before you get there. But I think it's lovely to watch it with an audience because you...
Right.
You know, sometimes you think a joke is going to be hilarious. You're shooting it on set, everyone's cracking themselves, and then you're watching it with like 300 other people and no one's laughed. You're like, oh, so maybe it wasn't funny.
Yeah.
Or they start... laughing at other points and you're like, oh, I never saw that as being funny. Oh yeah, I suppose it is
completely.
But I think it's obviously it helps when it's been really well received, because then you can go off, you know, I love it.
Yeah, you see guys. So I'll start to wrap things up with what's ahead, and you know, I'm now starting to feel like a bit of a stalker, because I feel like I know half the things that are ahead. But I was meeting with a mate of mine last week, Ivan Atkinson. And he was telling me about Cash Truck, because he produces Guy Ritchie's stuff. And that's one that you worked on recently, right?
Yeah.
How's that? Guy was the first person I ever worked with. He was the one who cut me out of the film completely, that I worked for several months and then just wasn't in it. It's fine. I adore him all the same. But how was that? Because that's such a different type of film and type of process than you've got... Shane Meadows at one end and you've got Guy Ritchie right at the other end.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe there's a John Woo or someone even further. But yeah, you've got, it's quite a different feel, right?
With Guy's film, you know, we had like six massive cameras all on rigs on a bungee. It's not on a bungee, but like on a massive rig. And, you know, we'll rehearse the scene and then he'll kind of go, I don't know, what are you thinking? And you're like, what?
What
do you mean? What am I thinking? Like
my first ever day on
and
set, we literally
just takes it all down. And you feel like, I feel like now we're just, there's like one camera there.
Yeah.
Suddenly it feels like actually there's one camera, and it's a lot. Oh, this is just really normal. This is just like it just happens to be.
His comfort on set was the thing that blew me away. The fact that he would just turn around and say, "Yeah, well, I don't know if that's working. Shall we try something else?" You're like,
"Yeah."
I've seen them spend an hour setting this up, and we're just not. And again, but that's what makes him, I guess it's that experience and that time in the game. That
he was, there was like, I think it was like on my second day we were filming and we were all just kind of standing around set and he's like, right, let's hear the lines. And we started doing the lines and he goes, ah, don't like that. Leave it with me. And then you're just like, what? He comes back and he's like, you know, got pages and he's like, try this. Yeah. And then we, you know, read it out and then he goes, yeah, that's much better. Okay, right, going in five. And then he starts counting down to one and you're like, what are we going? And it's like, so, but it's funny because you don't have too much time to think about, because almost like if you overthink about what you're, no one ever overthinks about what they're saying.
Yeah.
It's when that's when it starts to sound fake.
Yeah, of course.
You can totally like, you know, it's like going in here and me knowing what you were going to ask me and come out with these really fluid, articulate answers.
Or PR people always ask, is there a rough idea of the questions? I was like, nah. I've looked at the body of work, and we'll just talk.
We'll just have a little chit chat. Yeah, but
and you don't want that,
and that's it. But you've got like a hell of a lot of equipment, and it's just, I feel like it's kind of like Shane, but it's very similar to what Shane was doing.
Yeah, except you don't know that's going to be the process.
Yeah,
like with Shane,
you know it's going to be the process.
With Guy, you stay up all night learning your lines, and he goes, "So what should we say in this scene?" You're like, huh?
Yeah.
What? I know what we're saying. No, we're not saying that.
I'm not saying that. And he's got like...
exciting.
You know, Guy's got has got a very... I always think he's got a very specific pace to his films. They're quite snappy and fast. So like even the dialogue, you know, he'd be like, right, perfect, great, let's go again, but just get through
quicker.
Speed it up. And it works.
I love it. So is there much that you can tell us about Sensor? I should mention, I called it Cash... truck, then that's the working title, and they're not decided on a final title there, from what I know. What's Sensor about? And again, we touched on working with Smiley. How's that? How was that?
That was a lot of fun. It was great. It was with So Pranav Bailey Bond, she's the director on it. She was one of the screen stars of Tomorrow. We was this thing Screen International do, and I think it was back in like 2018. So we met very briefly, and then she'd been working on the script censor about this film censor in the 1980s,
right,
called Enid Baines, who censors films, works for the BBFC, and she comes across one particular film that has this very devastating psychological effect on her. Right. And from seeing that, you know, she's convinced that the girl in it is her sister who had gone missing, and this this quite a strong psychological effect on her, and you see like a person mental state go from one end of a spectrum to the other. And yeah, Michael Smiley's in it. He's such a lovely guy. He's so funny.
He's the best.
Yeah.
He's another one that you can just, if I've not been on set with him, but I'd imagine he would be the one I'm picking the brain of for everything they've done. The same like Maxine. I did a film with Chris Fairbank, who's been in absolutely everything over the years. And I would just be excited if my scene had got delayed, because it meant more time just
having a chat.
Sitting with Chris, just hearing all these mad stories.
He's hilarious. Michael's got, he's a gas. Because it was an intense character. It was like emotionally very demanding. And I had just come from shooting Raised by Wolves out in Cape Town. So I had 2 days for the prep. So we had Skyped, myself and Prano had Skyped kind of every weekend while I was in Cape Town to just talk to the character and talk to the script and just kind of workshop some ideas. So because it was going to be just so intense coming off the back of it. And I think that actually really worked. I was able to use that energy of that kind of heightened, vulnerable, tired state.
There's something in all of that. Genuinely.
Sometimes it's just like, you know, sometimes I remember like with Shane, and I learned this, it was like, you know, he's like, how are you feeling? And I was like, I'm not really I feel like really low today, or just energy wise. And he goes, right, well, that's how Zena's feeling. So, you know, we don't always have to go into every scene feeling great.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe you've got a headache, but maybe the character's got a headache that day.
Yeah.
Add another little layer. But with Prano, you know, it was, again, first time feature, but didn't feel like it was a first time feature.
Amazing. So I'll wrap things up with just a what's ahead. Is there anything else that you can talk about or that you're moving on to, or what's your plans?
The plans now. I think it's trying to find the next project there's a few things that you're just like reading and you kind of go, oh yeah, that'd be class.
Yeah.
But just trying to, I've got like a couple of weeks now to go back to Dublin the week. I have to go back to Cape Town actually. Pause. Yeah, I have to go back to Cape Town on Sunday.
It's now going to stress you out. Oh, actually, I've got to do this. On the way home, I've got to go and go busing.
God, I'm meant to be somewhere. Yeah, I've got to come with Cape Town on Sunday because you used to do some pickups. So I'll start listening to Sue's playlist.
Yeah.
On the plane over.
Love it.
And then, Dublin Film Festival for the launch of the film. And that's it.
It's exciting. Well, thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to seeing all the rest that's coming.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Cheers.
You've been listening to Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces.
There we go. How good was that? I told you we kind of just clicked and hit it off. It's one of the most relaxed conversations I've had, as was next week's. I proper buzzed at the end of this because there was a point, and the same happened in next week's one. It's mad when you're a big fan of someone and you're just chatting away. And on both of them, I can't remember if it's at the end of the podcast or after the podcast, that they kind of, Neve and Cosmo, kind of both acknowledge that they know who the fuck I am. I literally forget that. It never occurs to me that anyone will know any of my shit or what I'm doing or anything like that. So it always catches me off guard when I'm there fanboying out at someone who I think is amazing and kind of I'm studying with great excitement their careers and their performances. And then they're kind of like, I know you're shit, man. Not I know you are shit. I know what you're doing. I know your stuff. And that was cool. And I had that at the end of this one, and I had it with Cosmo. On the Cosmo one, he just quoted one of my lyrics, and I proper was like a nervous little boy. I was just like, oh, cool. And I can't remember, that might be actually on the recording, so listen out for that next week. But I'll be back next week. So yeah, until then, if you haven't already seen The Virtues and The Bisexual and all the other stuff we talked about, then go and watch them. They're about. But I'll be back next week. See you later.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.